Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday, the 12th of January. Very nice to have you with us. Let me introduce our panel to you and then we'll talk about what's going on in the news and share with you, the panelists will share their thoughts and then you can share your thoughts. All you have to do is write to us. It's roundtable@wamc.org. You can also go online and do it and it's very interactive and then you can comment and we can comment and it's very much a conversation that way. It's wamc.org/roundtable. And you will see the listing for today's date for the panel and just click on that and you can post there. Let me introduce our panel to you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is with us. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Joseph. Everybody should be very careful on their drive in or if they're out there because it's nasty.
Yeah, rather sucky. Yeah, not great. But on Friday, the weather hampered my drive. It hampered Mike's drive. But Mike left like I did, probably like a half hour earlier, just to make sure
that we get.
Yeah. We learn our lesson.
Drive slowly and carefully and defensively.
Right.
Yes.
All of those things.
Right. Yes. Mike Spain, good morning. Thank you very much for being with us. Times Union Associate Editor and political consultant Libby Post joins us.
Good morning.
Good morning. Very nice to have you here as well. Let's begin with topics for the day. And again, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We will, of course, start with Paris and what has been going on. There's two aspects of the story. Of course, a huge, huge rally, huge march in solidarity in Paris yesterday. A million plus people on hand, and it's been referenced. I don't know if anybody watched the Golden Globes last night, which we'll hopefully get to later, but mentioned many times about the solidarity there. And so we want to talk about that aspect and what this nation's part of was in that, or lack thereof, and also. But let's begin with the thoughts of because the Sunday news shows were on yesterday and the top U.S. officials were making the rounds, including Attorney General Eric Holder, who was speaking in interviews from Paris and warned again Sunday that deadly attacks similar to those in France could happen in the United States. And they raised fresh concerns about potential vulnerabilities in the nation's counterterrorism system. Holder, speaking in interviews from Paris, where he traveled over the weekend to meet with European counterparts in the wake of the attacks that left 17 people dead, discussed the potential for strikes against the United States by individuals or small groups tied to Al-Qaeda and other terror organizations. And I think this is just confirming what we all are worried about, were worried about, and said that, you know, what's stopping anybody from doing exactly the same thing in any city in this country? Or any place in those countries.
It takes almost, here's the thing. I was in the famous Barney Greengrass, the Sturgeon King restaurant on yesterday morning.
Did you have Sturgeon?
What'd you say?
Did you have Sturgeon?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't.
Did you have belly locks?
No, I had... I shouldn't admit this, but I had a pastrami sandwich.
For breakfast. Yeah, okay.
It's the right thing.
It
was the right thing to do. Anyway, but the point is, somebody takes a thing and throws it into a restaurant or goes to a school and does these terrible things. The whole idea, Joe, it seems to me, is to inflame by the Islamicists. The ones who self-identify as those folks, is to inflame things to the point where there, as Libby has put it, there is no middle, so that you get these both sides, and the haters are able on either side to make hay, but especially in this case, on the side of those people who are really trying to inflame their people to join them.
The other part about this is, I mean, much to what you were just saying, is that it could happen any place, anytime. And we felt this way after 9/11, mm-hmm. where, you know, they say, well, be on guard. Well, I don't know what that is. Like, what is that? I don't know. I don't know how you could ever think. I guess you could put yourself in any possibility, any scenario, whether you're a teacher or a cab driver or an insurance agent or a radio host, that at some point somebody could have cause to want to take out that organization.
Well, I think being on guard is the whole New York City thing. If you see something, say something. If you see a backpack just hanging out by itself, go find a cop and say, hey, there's a backpack over there and nobody seems to be claiming it. You know, that kind of thing. You know, be alert to your surroundings. Don't go as far as, you know, doing your own racial profiling, because that's a bit over the top, but just be aware of what and who is around you and what really it's about the what, you know, the bags, the knapsacks, the bombs that could be hidden somewhere.
Well, there's a response to that already from Chris, who says, no, seriously, they're infinitesimally small. Yes, anyone can do it, but it's not worth our civil liberties and billions of dollars.
What's small?
The risk of the terror attack.
I agree with him. I think he's got it. Yet the fear is the thing that is
Well, but if you're a political leader and you are seen as impotent and don't have the ability, so that, for example, in all of the religious Jewish schools, in the Jewish schools in France, there are going to be two people standing outside mm-hmm. with submachine guns. Mm-hmm. When the wall came down, and Roselle and I were invited by the Adenauer Foundation to be in East Germany, and they invited us on Yom Kippur, we went to shul.
Wow.
We went to shul, and there were soldiers. German soldiers with submachine guns mm-hmm. standing in front, because you had all these gangs, Nazi clubs. Gangs running around the streets. So there has to be at least the impression, if you're the leader, of trying to do something to put a stop to it.
You know, but he might be right. It might be infinitesimal in terms of...
Statistically. That's an actuarial
approach, but look at the Boston Marathon.
Sure.
You know, what two guys with knapsacks and homemade bombs did.
Right.
You know, terrorizing a city, then bringing a city together, you know, killing people, maiming people.
Those brothers were not as competent, I guess, at terrorism than the Karachi brothers in Paris.
No,
you know, very fortunately.
I don't know. I mean, it depends what you think the aims were. But if the aims were to disrupt everything all around the world, those two knapsacks did the job. The very kind of thing we're talking about right now that they want to do.
You know, 9/11... was the impact of 9/11 was not only to disrupt our daily lives, but by going after the financial sector, by going after the Twin Towers, to disrupt our financial stability.
And
it did a good job for a little while.
Well, it carried symbolism, too, you know, and that goes back to what you were originally talking about, Alan, and that this is intended to make people more polarized on issues.
Gotcha.
And that feeds, I mean, that services the radicals, the violent radicals, when others are so reactionary, because then they have to bring out the troops and they bring out the service, you know, the army guys with their guns to stand guard. And that just, that adds a level of tension and reminds everybody that we're not safe.
And it brings out the worst in the small-minded folks who can't see the global picture and just looks at somebody's skin color or looks at somebody's last name, you know,
and the way they look,
and that's it.
This could elect the Le Pen Party.
That's right.
In France.
In France.
Right. I mean, we've already seen it begun.
Which plays right into the hands
of the
terrorists.
Sure.
It really does.
Just shrinking that middle.
That's right.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk about the march as well and get more letters in, and then we'll take a break and find out what's happening with the BBC. We'll come back. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org or WAMC.org/roundtable. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support comes from University of New Hampshire, offering an online Master of Education program, online.unh.edu. The Preservation League of New York State, Albany, New York, protecting New York's historic buildings, districts, and landscapes since 1974. PreserveNYS.org. And NBT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NBTBank.com.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel and our discussion. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post, I'm Joe Donahue, and we welcome your comments as well. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We were talking about security. I should just quickly mention France has sent 10,000 troops across the country protecting hundreds of Jewish sites. So that is happening. I do want to talk about the march that took place yesterday, but first we have a letter or two.
We have a letter from Matt who says, NSA spying versus Charlie Hebdo. I'd love to hear your thoughts about the role of, quote, overreaching by the NSA in preventing terror attacks like Charlie Hebdo in the U.S., and that's from Matthew in Gansevoort. Well, that's an interesting point, but it's exactly what we've been talking about. You know that there's going to be a response. It's going to be a powerful response. And what they're going to show is that those people, look, we saw it in the 1950s with Joe McCarthy. There will be people who take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, what are you going to do? Tell them they can't do their work? Because the American people won't stand for that.
But what ultimately led to the fall of Joe McCarthy and the Red Scare? People began to realize how radical it was and how wrong it was, and they, you know, and it prevailed.
But in the meantime, Mike, there were suicides.
Oh,
there were people being fired wholesale.
Right.
Teachers were not safe in their classrooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yes, and along came a brilliant journalist, Edward R. Murrow, who did the end to, who did McCarthy in, and McCarthy did himself in because, you know.
He went after
Dwight Eisenhower.
Eisenhower. Calling Eisenhower a communist was just not the best or the brightest.
But the point was that when people realized finally, and maybe it was because people were timid about outing Joe McCarthy for the racist that he was, you know, when people finally realized what he was doing, they turned their back at him. I mean, I think that's the challenge that Murrow left all journalists to just make sure that This is being aired openly, and people know what's going on, and they know that it's not a choice between having an Islamic State on one side and Le Pen Party, you know, a racist political movement on the other side. You know, there's plenty in between.
Chris says, terror attacks, ignoring a bully is often the best thing you can do. We teach it to our children. Why don't we practice it as adults? 1 million people came out, actually 3 million people. Came out in Paris to show that nobody agrees with terrorists. We should be focusing on attention on the things, our attention on the things we want to accomplish. Well, I'll be honest with you. There are times not to turn your back and not to ignore a bully. I think that I don't think you want to ignore this now.
No, I think ignoring bullies just gives them the ability to continue to bully. You have to knock them in the nose.
I couldn't agree with you more.
That's what you have to do. You have to hit back.
You should read some of my mail.
Well, they're not bullying you. They're just being stupid.
No,
So an extraordinary chain of 1.5 million people, according to the Washington Post.
In Paris itself.
In Paris itself, yeah. Not including the...
NPR said 3 million yesterday.
I think around the globe.
And they say even 4 million across France and 1.5 in the city of Paris.
Oh, well.
But, you know, a lot of people.
But we quibble.
Yeah, it's a lot of people. Really, yeah. And it was led by a group of world leaders, linking arms, marching down the Boulevard Voltaire in a show of force Sunday meant to illustrate the power of unity and freedom of expression over the sting of terror. The French president, the German chancellor, the Israeli prime minister, the Palestinian Authority president were all there. A host of European and African leaders were there. The United States was represented by our
ambassador
to France. And so, the question is, you see these outpourings and you wonder, okay, well, how long will this last? How long will this solidarity last?
Well, the one thing that is causing the solidarity is that these folks, these terrorists, are a problem for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're the Palestinian Authority, you right. show up because, you know, they're always going to be, these guys are so far out there that everybody is unified by the fact they're worried about him. We heard from Mark, who said, "Dear panel, the shortness of memory strikes again. Did I not hear a president within the last few weeks voice the opinion that Europe, and particularly the Middle East countries, should be doing more to put down terrorist organizations? If that's the case, then what wouldn't it follow to not stick our big Yankee nose into past weekend's demonstrations?" Okay, I'm going to read any more because it's over the top, but over the allotted space. But I will say that both tabloids in New York City are basically raising the issue as to whether Obama should have been there at this, along with Angela Merkel and everybody else who's powerful. So this could well be, and Mark could be right in this letter. And that is that you're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Yeah, because I have a feeling if he went, the Post would have skewered him for going. I don't know about the news, but
I think you're probably right.
You know,
they're disgusting.
Yeah,
I wonder what the discussion was. The stories are now that John Kerry, the Secretary of State, is being dispatched to Paris. He apparently, according to some other news reports, was in some high, top secret, sensitive talks in Pakistan that have to do with the Taliban, so it isn't like he wasn't working. And but
this was Kerry?
Yeah.
And Holder was in Paris, but
he was not in the march, and that surprised people. Yeah. That he was available for the security meeting, and then he was doing a lot of TV, US TV, reports and on the news, et cetera. And maybe that was where he was trying to make his statement. But you don't know, you know.
But Libby's comment is just so on target. No matter what the president does, these guys will take advantage of this.
Yeah.
Well, the Post is referring it to as the Obama administration's solidarity snub.
Well, you know, I would like to know. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall in the White House in the Oval Office when they made this decision, when they discussed this. But I'm sure there were security concerns.
Oh, sure.
You know, abounding around him being there and causing even more violence.
And a major U.S. president.
Yeah, the president.
Yeah.
Just the presence alone of
him being there.
You can't do everything. Right, right.
You know, presidents have lives.
Well, yes.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to go to BBC News, find out the latest of what's happening. And then Libby has a point to make.
No.
I know this because there's a finger. It was a good finger. Not a bad finger.
A good finger.
The pointer finger.
Yeah, approach. That's right.
Let's be clear.
I have a point.
Right.
We welcome your letters, roundtable@wamc.org, roundtable@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post. We'll be back after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Monday morning. Very nice to have you with us. And we're talking about a wide range of issues. We have been focusing on the tragedy in Paris, of course, but we will move on to other issues in just a moment. We do want to get your letters and your thoughts on what we've been discussing so far.
And
we go to Alan for that. Yes.
Regular correspondent Julius says, what is the real goal of the self-proclaimed Islamic terrorists? Is it the establishment of a world caliphate? Or is it bringing on Armageddon? Or is it all of the above? That's what he said. Liam says, terror. If tyranny and oppression ever come to this land, it will be in the guise of fighting a foreign enemy. And who said that? U.S. President James Madison. Okay.
I'll take James Madison quotes for $500, Alex.
And Robert says terrorism. These acts of terror have two components to them. They are symbolic acts and they are real acts that result in injury and death. What we are outraged by is their symbolic aspect. If we were truly concerned about the preservation of life, there are so many better ways to use our resources, such as improving workplace and product safety, that would more effectively save lives than billions we are pouring into the so-called war on terror. And Andrea says, I am ashamed for America. Obama didn't go to Paris for the march. The U.S. missed a great opportunity to show a worldwide unity with world leaders to show solidarity against terrorism. It shows that the U.S. is only interested in war-like solutions, although respectfully and duly there, the ambassador to France is low-level in comparison to a president. And I guess that's it for now.
All right, and I haven't looked into this, but was the British Prime Minister there?
I didn't see the British Prime Minister.
I mean, yeah. I think the former
President Sarkozy of France was there. He was right in the front.
Well, that makes sense.
Sure,
France.
Yeah, right. let's move on to other topics, other stories, and find out what else is. We can talk about Mike. Let's talk about the TU story here. The Cuomo administration announced several key staff appointments on Sunday, including a state budget director and a new go into the Thruway Authority.
That's right. Robert Megna, who is highly regarded, as the budget director in the Cuomo administration, is moving over to take. The beleaguered Thruway Authority, the top two officials there stepped down. They're in a
little bit of a pickle.
A pickle, yes. They have a very expensive bridge to complete connecting Westchester and Rockland counties. Right. And it's going to cost $4 billion or more, and coming up with a way to build that, pay for it, and not increase the toll to like $15 per crossing is their challenge. And Bob Megna is going to go over there. A new budget director is being brought in. And some other top positions are being shifted in the Cuomo administration as it gears up for the second term. But, Alan, this is not unusual for a governor to sort of bring in a fresh team.
Second term, mm-hmm. too. Yeah.
And, well, he should.
Yeah.
I mean, he's getting rid of some of the political types.
Yes, he certainly
Larry
is.
Schwartz's. You know, these guys got a war rather than
and
say
Bill
hello
Mo-
to you.
Rowe, who he's bringing in to take Larry Schwartz's place,
right.
seems to be an incredibly accomplished guy.
Look, this is a very good time for Andrew to make a readjustment. And when I say that, I mean, look, I have issues with the way he has always conducted himself, you know, rather the fight than do anything else. And he has that reputation. People don't really like him. Many people respect him. For getting things, quote, done, mm-hmm. although I have my issues there, too, about, like, what, you know.
The SAFE Act, same-sex
right.
marriage,
sure.
A couple other things.
Or, you know, the Moreland Act Commission.
that's a bridge I'd like to sell you.
This is a little joke.
Right.
Okay, so, but the point really is this offers him a time for a reorientation, and I would think from looking at the quality of the appointments that they are along those lines, that he knows that he can't afford to have this, you know, we'll get you. Because after the book came out, you may remember this, after the book came out, he stood up and he said, look, I'm not the old Andrew anymore. And the real question is he the old Andrew?
This is his first, demonstration of what he intends for his second term.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
And Bob Megna, you know, he had four on-time budgets or three on-time budgets under Governor Cuomo, so... You know, he's the right guy to go fix a fiscal problem, I guess, at the Thruway Authority.
And the other thing is, people really like this guy. He's a mm-hmm. very nice man, and he's a guy who knows, who is competent in his field, and who is not politicized. And I think that's what really catches a lot of people by this appointment.
Let us go on to other stories, unless there was more you wanted to touch on that. You're good?
No. Patsy says, good morning, enjoying the discussion. And here's info about the leaders who attended. Take care, travel safely, as always. Patsy, and he said, and the headline on her thing is, British PM did attend the
okay,
march.
There we okay. go.
Always good to get corrected.
Absolutely.
Okay, and we've had a little bit of a problem with the signal this morning. It says, and it has been corrected, and then that's it. Wait a second. Kevin also says Cameron was there in front and center, and like that.
Yeah, the Spanish Prime Minister, the German Prime Minister, the British Prime Minister. Okay. There we go. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Let's move on to other stories and... let's get to. I find this interesting, and it was a story that I hadn't heard a lot about until the Times wrote about it, and that is about the fire chief in Atlanta. So here's what's happening. The mayor, Kasem Reed, made a decision to dismiss his fire chief last week for giving coworkers copies of a Christian self-help book condemning homosexuality. So this is fanning new kinds of legal and political flames in the city where deeply held religious convictions exist in a kind of defining tension with a reputation for New South tolerance. Mr. Reed fired Kelvin Cochran, the chief, on Tuesday over the distribution of his book, which condemns homosexual acts as vile, vulgar, and inappropriate. Reached at home on Thursday, Mr. Cochran referred all questions to his lawyers, who issued a statement on his behalf. The statement said, "I am heartbroken that I will no longer be able to serve the city and the people I love as the fire chief for no reason other than my Christian faith." So I find this issue interesting because obviously you knew the guy's background and his beliefs, or we're assuming you did,
well,
when you hired him, right?
But that's two different things,
right?
I really think it's a distinction. He viewed his Christianity to look at homosexuality as being a sin, you know, and some Christians do view that. Many, many other Christians do not. But anyway, if that's the way he interprets his Christianity, if that's his personal feeling, but he behaves completely equal in the way he treats people and administers his job as a firefighter and a fire chief, you know, that's his personal beliefs and it shouldn't enter into how he does his job. When he starts to hand out propaganda, basically, to coworkers while he's wearing the fire chief's hat. Yeah. That's where he oversteps the bounds.
And his own book, no less.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. Well, it's like, here's my manifesto,
yeah,
right?
Right?
I mean, this is what I believe.
Right. I mean, Frank Bruni in the Times yesterday wrote a great piece entitled "Your God and My Dignity," and all about, you know, this notion of religious liberty and the use of that term to be able to do what this fire chief does while trampling on people's civil rights, and this, and feeling that religious liberty means that you can have the church and state together without a problem, regardless of the impact that it has on other people. And, you know, we see it all the time happening constantly where because the Alliance Defense Fund is involved with this case now, representing the fire chief. And these are the folks who are constantly out there driving a wedge between people who understand what religious freedom is about and who use the term religious liberty and their own views to change the way government works.
Right.
And that's what this is about.
I thought the mayor's point, I watched a press conference that he did, and I thought it was interesting because he was saying, look, we have protocol in the city. He said, forget about all of the issues here, which are troubling enough and certainly had a part of the decision. But we have a protocol when people write books that they have to be, that there are approvals that are given, mm-hmm. and that was not done in this case. Also, he felt that there was a very strong concern on the fact of the city that could open them up to discrimination lawsuits. If in this book you are decrying and saying that homosexuality is a sin, and then God forbid someone's home burns down and they die,
and they're gay, then
what do you say?
Right, right. You know, it's one thing for people to believe this; it's another thing to bring it into the public discourse and have it be public policy.
But which, by the way, I just want to clarify is not what I'm saying his intent was.
No, his intent was.
But clear. What I am saying is I understand the city's position of saying that could be viewed as how the intent was viewed.
When he is distributing to his
subordinates,
right.
Yes.
His manifesto, as you described it, which essentially concludes that homosexuality is a sin, he seems to be tacitly approving discrimination.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying we don't want gays and lesbians in the fire department.
Well, my view on this is the mayor did exactly the right thing and fired him. Period.
Well, I love the mayor's quote. I hired him to put out fires, not start one. Right there is a great quote, you know,
it's
absolutely true.
Yeah.
You know, and leave your religious beliefs at home.
It's an interesting story. I'm sure we'll obviously be covering much more about it over the weeks to come. Let's talk about this happened on Friday, and we haven't had a chance to talk about it, and then we'll take a break. But well, Mitt Romney is back in town.
Gee. It's amazing.
This is terrific.
So,
if I'm the Democratic Party, what you were going to tell us, Joe? And I'm sorry.
No, well, so Mitt Romney announced that he was not the only reminding Republican donors and leaders that he was that Jeb Bush was not the only
choice
that he was very interested in. He also was going to explore have an exploratory committee for 2016,
which means he's running,
and he wants to run again. So
he's got to get through Pataki.
This has always been
one of the 26. Is it that are
yes? So this has always been on the back burner as a possibility that he would do it. And I think in the past some family members came out and said that he would not do it, and then some said he would. And then now he has made it very clear that he is at least interested.
He's got the dog ready to go on the top of the car.
On the car.
Let me just say, the Democrats are at the side of their beds, and they've got their hands pointed to the heavens saying,
Please
do this. Their worst nightmare is Jeb. Mm-hmm. And I have no question that Jeb is going to be the candidate. I think Jeb gets to be the candidate.
But this will really harm him.
This doesn't help things.
No. Well, the strategy for both of them is to get out early and tell the big donors that they're in this for the long haul, and to get some commitments. And when these big donors decide, you know, the Sheldon Adelson decides who he's going to back in this race, that may define which candidate survives.
So there comes a point at which they always decide, do we want a candidate who will philosophically agree with me on everything, or do we want a candidate who will win?
Who will win.
And if they want a candidate who wins, Jeb is their best
player. Or who will be good for my financial pocketbook and my bottom line.
Or my political beliefs.
I suppose. I think, look, when you control the government, you have a lot of jobs at your disposal. Mm-hmm. The Republicans know that. The rank and file knows that. And, you know, I don't think that Romney distinguished himself in the last campaign, and I don't know why they would do it again, except that he wants it, and maybe they'll give it to him.
So I think, I was going to say, I think there are some people who have Romney remorse, who kind of would have liked to have seen Romney the last 4 years or the last couple of years.
Get a prescription for that. Right. Romney remorse. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe voted for Obama and aren't happy with the sluggishness of the, the return of the economy or something. And
what? We have one of the best economies in the world right now.
Right now, it's stronger than ever.
And, you know, I think, look, you're right.
I don't personally believe that, but there's people impatient about how things are going economically.
But
they
you're right, Mike, but there are some people in this world who just don't like Obama. And so that makes you right about that part of it. But in terms of the substance
Thank you.
Of it.
But as far as the main part of it, you're right. You're
well,
dead wrong.
In terms of fact.
Right.
In terms of. But no, you know, the thing.
Take what I can get.
Right. But Mike's making a point. In terms of the real facts here, the economy is booming. Obama took over. The Dow was at 7,000. Now it's at 17,000.
We were thinking of a huge recession.
People don't want to recognize these facts. They just refuse to say,
you think that's racist?
I do. I do. I think that people don't want to give him the credit he deserves.
All right. So let me ask you a question. If you are on looking at the Republican political spectrum, okay, and you have Jeb Bush, Mitt Romney, and let's just throw in Chris Christie as another possible.
And Mike Huckabee on the other end.
Right. Okay. So Huckabee, obviously very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
Do we put Romney in the very conservative, or does it depend on which Romney show?
No.
I mean, this is the Massachusetts
Romney
governor.
The father of Romney care, which was Obamacare.
Right. Romney is what we call a pragmatist.
Yeah.
Yes. He'll do what he has to do.
Yeah. So where does Jeb Bush or where do Jeb Bush and Chris Christie fall on that spectrum?
I truly don't believe that Chris Christie has a shot here.
Neither do I.
I just think he keeps making mistakes, stepping into it, rooting for the wrong football teams.
Right, hugging Jerry Jones.
That's not a good idea.
Doing all of that stuff. No, but I do think there's such a thing as integrity. And the real question is, if you see a guy just switching his positions in order to garner support,
as opposed to somebody who sticks with their base philosophy. Don't people respect somebody with the so-called integrity factor?
I don't think Jeb Bush has been put in the spotlight like that to be able to have him do any flip-flopping as of yet.
Well, the Times did an interesting piece about how he was moderating some of his stances, you know, in order to get ahead. But I do think that he is a Bush.
Yeah.
That the Bushes, the Bush, as the English would say, dynasty, has done well in this country, and that an awful lot of Republicans are going to remember that.
Let's take a break. We'll come back and talk about other issues. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org, or WAMC.org/roundtable. We'll be back after the short break.
Support comes from The Blue Marble, a world of gifts in Amherst, Massachusetts, purveyors of hand-selected gifts and jewelry from American and fairly traded artisans, thebluemarble.biz. Steve Lewis Subaru, Hadley, Massachusetts, a new and used Subaru dealer serving the Pioneer Valley, Hartford, and Springfield, offering new Subarus plus used cars, trucks, and SUVs, stevelewissubaru.com. And OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute at Berkshire Community College, offering winter courses in photography, the modern Middle East, Dante's Inferno, and more, beginning January 13th. BerkshireOLLI.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is the 12th of January, and very nice to have you with us. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. Anything you want to catch us up on there, Alan?
Well, Kenner checked in and said something. What did he say? He said, the candidate, I too have no doubt that Scott Walker will be the Koch brothers' man in 2016. That's from Kenner.
Maybe as a Veep.
Yeah, maybe as a Veep. I like that.
Do you want to talk about, we have about 5 minutes. Do you want to talk about the FBI?
Well, I think you have to talk about something that I really know nothing about.
It's the Golden Globes.
The Golden Globes. Yes. The Golden Globes. All right, we're going to talk about the Golden Globes. This is always fun to do with Alan, actually. I love this. One of my favorite shows I ever heard was Alan doing a Vox Pop with Seth Rogenboy about the Grammys. It's simply one of the best shows I've ever heard in my life.
I knew zero.
No, but it was great. It was like a tutorial for. It was great.
Yeah.
So the Golden Globes were last night. So the big winner, if there is such a thing, is 72nd annual Golden Globe Awards. This is from the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, and from my understanding, it's about 30 people. That ultimately made this decision.
Yeah.
It's a very small group, maybe 30, 50, something like that.
Are they all foreigners, Joe?
Well, they cover that beat, yes.
They work for those papers, you know. Like
over there.
Like Le Monde.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So the film, the big winner last night, I guess the two big winners, Boyhood and The Grand Budapest Hotel. I'm not sure, but I believe I just heard a snort.
I saw both. Yeah,
well, there you go.
I thought Grand Budapest Hotel was terrific.
I
love
that one. I don't remember either of them.
Okay. Boyhood was the movie that was shot
Richard
Linklater.
Yeah, I remember that part.
12 years. Ethan Hawke, Patricia Arquette. Patricia Arquette won yesterday, too.
Yes.
Richard Linklater won for the screenplay. I sat with my wife, watched that movie on the plane, and she hated it. I loved it.
I was disappointed.
Tell me a little bit more about what it was about.
It was about this
teenage angst.
I remember what the thesis was.
Well, it was just a kid growing up, and sort of, and what the parental responsibilities and what impact they have on the child. My big problem with it is it focused as much on his sister, the girl. So why call the movie Boyhood? Because it was actually about childhood. It was
sexism.
It was. I felt that way, but whatever. I bought the movie
a little bit more on him. Than it did on
I don't know.
We saw Mr. Turner this weekend, and that was very good.
Who was? What's that?
It's the thing about this very famous British artist. Back in the day, in the Victorian age, and how he did, and it was very good. Okay. I remember because I saw it this weekend, but I don't remember the other one because it was a long time
ago. I saw Into the Woods this weekend, which was just tremendous. But the thing with Boyhood was it was like watching my son grow up on the, you know, it was like all the teenage angst. It was all the stuff that many of us have lived through. And I was like, okay, from a conceptual point of view of going back every year for a few weeks to film the same guy and the same parents, the same actors, it was fascinating to see that. But the storyline itself was like, okay.
So was there a highlight, something that could sort of jog me back electrically into remembering what the film was about? Was there a moment?
If we haven't by now,
was
I don't
there
think.
A moment?
Yeah, I know.
Possible?
I don't know. I mean, it was very, I think this is probably Libby's point, is that there really wasn't much happening. It was about a kid growing up.
Yeah.
And the impact that the parents have on the kids. You're looking for something like where
Patricia,
the boat blows up.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking for like, something to remind me.
Right.
What
well,
the
that's what I mean,
about.
But yeah. I don't, yeah. There's not really that
there's,
scene. Other
right.
than,
there isn't. It's
you
just
know,
maybe
you know.
That's the problem.
Yeah,
right,
I think that
right.
is. That says a lot about it. Although I do have to say that Tina Fey and Amy Poehler had, I thought, they had several really good jokes last night. But one of them being Patricia Arquette was nominated for this film, and it proves that to be a successful actress in your 40s, you have to be hired when you're in your late 20s. And I thought that was a great joke.
That is a good joke.
So yeah. There was that, and then Grand Budapest Hotel was the other one.
I really enjoy that movie.
But the power of the Golden Globes.
That was sort of the pastel movie.
Yeah.
Now, and
yeah,
it was sort
yeah.
of the...
I remember
you
yeah.
remember that one. Come on.
Yeah.
It was a
Wes
lot
Anderson.
Of, yeah. yeah, it was good.
Well, I was going to say the power of the Golden Globes to propel forward, you know, yeah. artists and works and television programs, et cetera, you know, it seems immense. I mean, it really seems like a big deal. And you said it was about 30 people making the decision,
yeah.
but this was a big event. And the big story, the other story today was that the major traditional TV networks didn't get any
yeah.
programs with recognition, and yet Netflix and Amazon both had series that won awards.
Yeah.
So it really shows you the realignment of media and how people consume media.
And what's fascinating to me is the Amazon series Transparent about Jeffrey Tambor transitioning from a man to a woman was best comedy, which really, mm-hmm. you know, it shows us how far we've come. Because even 5 years ago, that never would have been a possibility.
On the way over at 3:30 this morning, 3 o'clock this morning, I was listening to BBC, as always I always do, and they had a story about bloggers on YouTube, and that there were people who were doing blogs about how to put your makeup on. Young women, how to put your makeup on that transcended anything that's on the major networks.
Uh-huh.
You know, 12 million people watching a kid put her makeup on every morning, you know, on a blog. That's where we're going.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Well, we're out of time.
Oh, boy.
So that's where we're going.
Okay.
We'll be back tomorrow. We'll see you then. The show continues after this.